Well, hello everybody. My name is JC and thank you for joining me on my podcast. The reason for my podcast really is it's an open forum for me. It's something new. I've never done this before. And I wanted to document my journey. I guess I'll give you guys a little bit of a background about me. I'm a 44-year-old guy. I live here in Southern California, but I'm originally from Texas. Married 20 years. Congratulations to me. I can't believe we've made it 20 years. My wife is a glutton for punishment. I have three wonderful kids. I have a 15-year-old son. I have a 12-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old daughter. So you can see that I'm just an average everyday guy. I know I said I'm from Texas, but my Southern accent never really stuck with me. So the purpose of all this, the purpose of this podcast, the purpose of me is that I'm trying to document my journey. The journey that I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make a living here in this cold, cruel world. Don't get me wrong, I'm gainfully employed. I've been working for a wonderful company for 10 years now, and about 10 years, and I make a pretty good living. The problem that I have, and I think a problem that a lot of people have, is that you go to work. You make a decent wage, whatever that wage may be. You come home, you try and raise your kids up and try and take care of your family. But at the end of the day, there's just no money. There's just no time between Little League games, baseball games, gymnastics, ballet, wife, cars being fixed, house, putting a roof over your head, all those kinds of things. It's just like, oh my God, my wife and I look at each other and say, no, we can't go on vacation this year because we've got to buy braces. Or we can't go on vacation this year because we've got a kid that got hurt and you got to pay for those injuries. And we can't go on vacation this year because it's somebody got sick in the family and we got to take care of them. Or, we're always putting things behind. Over the course of several years, over the course of just doing that over and over again and living here in Southern California, we've come to realize that we live in a very expensive part of the country, yes. And two, it's darn near impossible, it feels like, to be able to. I don't want to say the American dream is gone, I'm just saying that the American dream is harder to reach. And I don't know if you guys feel the same way, I don't know if you guys agree with me or not. Like I said, I make a pretty good living. We pay our bills, but I haven't been able to buy a home here in Southern California. We've been living here for 8 years or so, and living here in Orange County, and I can't buy a house. I don't have $200,000 for a down payment, and all these houses here are just so ridiculously expensive. You just can't compete. And before you guys go into loan programs and things like that, for example, FHA loans are here, I can't even remember, $600,000 or something like that for an FHA loan. Or the problem with an FHA loan is that there's no houses for $600,000. And then you might say, well, just move out into the desert. Yeah, that's great. Okay, I'll commute 2 hours one way to work. That's what I need to do, and that's what a lot of people have sacrificed. But then again, you don't see your kids because you're gone an extra 2 hours plus a day, just living in your car. You get to miss the soccer games, and you get to miss the ballet recitals and things of that nature, which sucks. So I'm not really ranting. I'm just talking about some of the issues that I'm dealing with, and probably some of the issues that you guys are dealing with. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to document my journey. And I came to a realization a couple of years ago that I needed to find another source of income. And I love my job. I love what I do. I deal with customers all day long, and it's a great job. I enjoy it. But it is not making me enough money to buy a home. I don't have enough money for a down payment on a home. I don't even have enough money to put my three kids through college. I don't even know how I'm going to put my three kids through college. No idea. No clue. College is so expensive. It's getting more expensive every day, and I think those are things that I'm going to be talking about in future podcasts, and I will be broadcasting a lot more. But college is like, oh, you know, you can't afford it. Well, get let your kids get, you know, let them get loans and things of that nature, which I'm probably going to have to do. And then if I'm able to help pay for those student loans, because I frankly don't want my kids to come into this world, come into their adulthood with $200,000 in debt. But at the same time, paying for all these things that we're trying to pay for, my wife and I look at retirement like there's just no way. At the path we're living, there's just no way. We don't have expensive cars. My wife doesn't have expensive jewelry. The only jewelry my wife truly has outside of costume jewelry is our wedding ring that I bought her when 20 years ago when I didn't have any hair on my chin and all I had was dreams. I'm a very lucky guy. Don't get me wrong. I'm ridiculously lucky. I've got a beautiful wife who I love and she loves me. And yes, we've been married for 20 years and I have three great kids. Now, it's not to say that I don't have any issues with my kids. I mean, what parent does and what parent, if I see a parent who sits there and posts on Facebook and Instagram and things like that, my kids are perfect, everything's great. I look at them kind of skeptical going, come on, man, they can't be all that great. They can't be perfect 24/7. I have my 15-year-old son. I love him to death, and he's a great boy, but he's definitely had his trials and tribulations. He's definitely had his issues. He's got learning disabilities and things like that. And all honestly, he hasn't passed school. He hasn't passed a grade since sixth grade. He failed seventh grade. He's failed eighth grade, and he's failed ninth grade. He's a talented baseball player. And he got accepted onto the high school baseball team, but he didn't play one inning because he can't pass his classes. No pass, no play. I get it. It sucks. He's very, very talented, and he's very, very good. But he can't, because of his learning disabilities, he just has a hard time staying focused long enough to do an assignment, to finish an assignment, to turn in that assignment properly, so that he can get grades. And yes, he's got special education needs at school, and he's got all these different programs and platforms that are helping him out, and yet he's still failing. You know, what's a dad to do? What's a mom to do? We're not sure. We have no idea. We would love for him to play for, and he does play some travel teams and things of that nature, but, you know, we would love for him to go on and play for a college baseball team. If the Lord wills it and his skills provide it. But at the same time, colleges won't look at him or colleges can't see him because he can't play in the high school team. So these are tough things. If any of you guys have any suggestions for us, please feel free to write in and let us know. Maybe we can look into that. We've looked at homeschools and things of that nature. With that, we have a 12-year-old daughter who is a whole lot like me. She is Little Miss Can't Be Wrong, and she's very diligent, and she's very much on top of it. And I feel between the 15-year-old with issues, you know, some learning disabilities and things of that nature, and the 4-year-old daughter who is a 4-year-old. She takes up tons of our time. She's got me wrapped around her teeny tiny pinky. I'll tell you guys a little story about her one day. And she's so wonderful, but she's so much mommy, 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 daddy, daddy, daddy. I need every bit of your attention, that I feel like the middle child syndrome is true in my house. And I feel like the worst dad in the world, but she's a fantastic daughter. She's got a very level head and she has great grades and she does work very, very hard. And I worry every day, every minute of the day for her because I don't want her to feel like she's less loved because all of our attention's on the bookend kids, you know, the problem with three kids. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of parents that might hear this one day or, I don't know if anybody's going to listen to this or not, but they hear the issues going on with their middle kids and they want to be able to spend more time with them. But then you have the bookend children that are demanding so much attention from you too. It was funny. I was at the gym not too long ago working out, and I was talking to a guy, and he's got four kids, and he seemed to have it all together, and he just laughed. And I was looking at him like, oh my gosh, four children, three is hard enough for us. We're done having kids. And I was like, how do you do it? And he's like, well, you know, me and my wife, the football analogy is like, or sports analogy is like, we just play zone defense. So that just made me laugh. And he's like, it's all you can do, man. You're outnumbered 2-1. My wife and I were outnumbered. And he's like, you just play zone. And I thought that was so funny and such a simple answer to a very complex problem. And I thought that was fantastic work. So the journey that I started a couple of years ago because of the high cost of living here, but also I wasn't happy with where I am in my life. I have very little money saved up for retirement. Very, very little. We've been renting for years and years here in Southern California. I decided a couple of years ago, about a year and a half ago, really, that I need to make some changes. I need to start figuring out how I can bring in another income stream. I read a long time ago that the average millionaire in America has 7 streams of income. Now, that's not necessarily meaning that they have 7 jobs. That means they have 7 streams of income. So some of their streams of income can be their job. And then another stream of income could be their investments, you know, dividend income, interest income, things of that nature. Another stream of income could be real estate investments that they have, creating a monthly income stream. So, you know, it could be a side job. It could be so many different things. But the average millionaire has 7 streams of income. And I said, you know what? I've got 1 stream of income in my household and I need to take that literally and I need to go out and get 7 streams of income. So as the little one got a little bit older, we decided to put my little one in daycare and my wife has gone back to work. It's been many years since she's gone back to work. And before she was a pretty high-end employee at an oil and gas company. And now living here in Southern California, there's not a lot of oil and gas jobs here because they just don't have those kinds of things here. So she ended up taking a front office job at a daycare. Unfortunately, it just doesn't pay the same. And the amount of money versus the amount of work that's entailed, it's pretty tough. I don't know how people do that job. I don't know why they do that job for the amount of money that they're paid, but it is very little pay for a ridiculous amount of work. And it's a very large daycare, roughly 300 kids or something like that in various ages. And it's not like you're dealing with 300 kids. You're dealing with 300 kids' parents all day, every day. So you're dealing with the kids, you're dealing with the parents, you're dealing with the teachers, you're dealing with the distributors and the other ancillary employees that are coming and going all day long. And it is just a slog from the moment you walk in the door to the moment you leave. And it is a very long, crazy, crazy day. Just trying to get everything organized, everything through, and all that good stuff. Everybody who works over at those places, they deserve a medal. Because the level of just turmoil from all the kids and the demands from all the parents and all the... They rarely get the praise they deserve. It's the mom and dad's coming in to grab their kids and leaving, and they're polite in most cases, but when there's an issue with their kid, oh my God, the world has to stop, and they have to complain, and they have to gripe, and they have to, you know, pardon my French, bitch and moan for hours and for just over and over and over again, and that's not fair. I think that we don't treat people as well as we should. I think we have too much of a high sense of ourself, and I think it's gotten worse over the years, that we tend to believe the hype of ourselves, that I am amazing, I don't do any wrong, and I can't believe that the cupcakes I ordered for my kids' birthday party at their birthday didn't get delivered on time. It's your fault. You know, things of that nature, and gripe, 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 and complain, complain, complain. I think that what we need to do is we need to take a step back. And I certainly am guilty of it, and I certainly am working very, very hard on that, is taking a step back and trying to put myself in the shoes of the other person. I think if we did that more, I think that if we had a more of an open mind and an open heart, I think what would happen is that we would bring down a little bit of the condemnation, the vitriol, the things that are going on. Don't even get me started on politics. I have no idea if I'm ever going to talk about politics, but it is just brutal. Funny enough, when my wife and I, when we moved into our new rent house here in Orange County, we canceled all television. We canceled our cable subscription. All we have is Netflix, Amazon Prime, and HBO. Got to have HBO. Got to watch Game of Thrones. Forgive me. So that's all I got. I have, you know, and we're a lot happier. People talk to me and say, what's going on in the news and things of that nature. And honestly, I have no answers. I have no clue what's going on in the stock market. No clue what's happening in politics outside of YouTube videos and looking at, you know, Yahoo News and different news websites whenever I have a moment. But going back, just to touch on that a little bit more, I think the house is happier. You know, we're watching old DVD cartoons at night. The other night we were having dinner, and after dinner we turned on The Sound of Music. The 4-year-old loved it. The 12-year-old loved it. The 15-year-old was watching it too. And you know, we were just enjoying the sounds of innocence. We were enjoying the sounds of laughter and music and teaching our kids better things than what's out there in cable news, what's out there in a regular TV show. The TV shows, God, man, they're just not the same. They're just not the same. Maybe it's because I'm an 80s kid. I was born in the 70s. But I was raised in the 80s, and the first president I remember is Reagan. Ronald Reagan was my first president. My kids' first president that they remember is Obama. I'm not saying that in a good or a negative light. I'm just saying that's what it was. So I remember Reagan. So if you guys are my age, or around my age, you remember growing up in the 80s. And some of the 80s shows were fantastic, and a lot of them were groundbreaking. I remember watching I remember watching The Fall Guy. I loved The Pickup Truck. I don't know if you guys remember The Fall Guy or not, but I loved The Pickup Truck from The Fall Guy. I had a little Hot Wheel like that. Played with it outside. You know, nowadays our kids barely play outside, and that's kind of sad. I had a Tonka truck that I used to ride around. I'd stick my knee in the back of the Tonka truck, and I'd ride it around my driveway. I remember back then I could ride my bike throughout the neighborhood, and I didn't come home until the streetlights came on. And nowadays, you know, with my 15-year-old, and he's got a cell phone, and my 13-year-old, who's going to get a cell phone for her birthday. Don't tell anybody. Her birthday's coming up in May, later on this month. She's going to get her first cell phone. And, I track their phones all day long. Now, I know some people might sit there and say, oh my God, you're invading their privacy. I'm their parent. I don't see that as invasion of privacy. I see it as a parent making sure their kid is where they're supposed to be. And what's funny, from my parenting perspective, and you might agree or not agree, I tell them I'm tracking their phone. In fact, I tell them that I see their emails and I see their texts. Don't really, but I do. I tell them that I do. And that keeps them on notice, that dad is watching, that papa is watching, and that I don't play around. They, in my opinion, at this age, they don't have privacy. What they have is a mom and dad that love them and care for them, and we are trying to give them the upbringing that we think is best for them to develop a strong mental fortitude for adulthood. That means you can't throw the world at them right away. And that's what the cell phone will give them. The world immediately without a filter unless you filter it. I have password protections and all kinds of stuff on their phones where they can't get into websites they're not supposed to get into. Because it's scary. When I was a kid growing up in the 80s, I remember the Sears catalog, and the dirtiest thing I got in my childhood was the bra section of the Sears catalog, and my head wanted to explode. Nowadays, these kids can see anything and everything, and it is a beautiful and ugly tool all at the same time. I am not a fan of modern technology and letting them have it. And I am not a fan of social media. I have it. We've got Facebook. We have Instagrams, mainly to keep up with the relatives across the state line and also for my businesses that I'm trying to grow. And that's another thing that I'll be talking about. But for anybody who's got kids, hear me on this. For anybody who's got kids and you're thinking about getting them a cell phone soon, whether they're 9 years old, whether they're 13 years old, whatever their age may be, I made the biggest parenting mistake that I can think of right now is when my 15-year-old, when he got his first cell phone. I can't remember if he was 12 or 13 years old. He might have been 13, I think. So he's had a cell phone for a couple of years. And by the way, he's broken a couple of them already. So for all you parents who are going to get your kids a cell phone, unless they're really, really good kids, please, please, please get the insurance on your phone. Please, please, please get one of those really strong, hard cell phone cases, because my doofus kid dropped his cell phone 28 times, broke the screen 28 times, broke it, and I had to end up going and buying new cell phones because he's just a boy. I love my 15-year-old son, but he's a caveman. He's a troglodyte. If this was 50,000 years ago or 100,000 years ago, my son would be a knuckle dragger. He would have hair coming out of his forehead, and he would be dragging his knuckles, going, ooh, ah, and chewing on rocks. That would be my boy. And I love him to death, but he is all boy. Regardless, get the insurance on the cell phones. Get and protect it. And if it's an iPhone or a smartphone, tell them you're monitoring it. Make sure you have those password protections so they can't get into certain types of websites, you know, with higher ratings and things of that nature. Make sure you let them know that you're tracking it. I'm tracking where you're going. I want to know where you're at. I want to ding you every time, anytime I want, and tell you to get your butt home. And I tell their friends that too. And some of the friends like it. Some of the friends don't like it. Some of the friends actually come up and tell me that their parents, they don't give two shakes what they do, how they spend their day and how they spend their nights. And I tell them, look, man, when you're in my home, I care. And when you're in my home, you're influencing not only my son, but you're influencing my family. So make sure your influence is good or you won't be allowed in my home anymore. So the big parenting mistake that I made was that I gave my son a phone when he was 12 or 13 years old, I can't really remember. And then 6 months later, he's begging me for Instagram. And I caved in and let him have Instagram. Now, back then, I didn't really know what Instagram was. I knew of social media and that scared me, but I said, okay, fine. Almost immediately, I let him have social media. I let him have Instagram. And almost immediately, I noticed a very rapid change in my son's behavior. Very rapid change. It exposed him to tons of images and tons of thoughts, tons of memes. You parents probably know what I'm might know what I'm talking about or not. Memes, these funny things, but tons of things that are not great. They're not good for your soul. And I keep telling my kids this: good in, good out; bad in, bad out. That's just what's just going to happen. And he was meeting all these people online that don't even live here. They shouldn't be talking to a 12-year-old, 13-year-old boy, but they are. And they would send him DM direct messages. And these DMs you can't see unless you're logged in. So I can track his phone, but I can't see his DMs unless I'm on his phone looking at the DMs. And they can send you all kinds of stuff, direct message to an individual. And it is tough, tough, tough. It changed my son immediately. And it took me literally years
to until he got older and got more mature on his thought process, it took years to bring him back to reality. I'm not saying that he went off the deep end and went crazy. He did do some really stupid crap, and I'll talk about those in the future. And he was doing some stuff that freaked me out and ruined our Christmases because he was doing stuff that was just harmful to him. And it was all because of the influence of social media and the influence of his friends. And they were all under the influence of their phones and social media and things like that. So it was just like this crazy ball of knowledge and information and good and bad information all being thrown at a young mind that's not ready for that stuff. I'm really direct with my kids. I call a spade a spade. And I tell them this often. If it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a dadgum duck. That's my southern drawl coming out of me, saying dadgum. And I say y'all a lot too. You'll probably get to know that. But I'll tell my kids when they're screwing up. And I will let them know. I'll put them on notice. And I will tell them, you are not a perfect little angel who does no wrong. I don't want to build a false hope in my kids or a false sense of self in my kids. Now, it's a hard balance because I also don't want my kids to, I don't want to crush their confidence either. But I also want them to go to high school. And I see this now, my 15-year-old son, and even when he was playing in Little League, he's not really a Little League now. He's too old for that. But he was playing in a baseball team when he was 14 years old, and I remember I was coaching the team, I was helping to coach the team, and we were at a baseball game, and some of the boys on his team were crying, and my son looked at me and said, "Why are they crying?" And I looked at him and said, "I have no idea," and I walked up to those boys and said, "You guys need to just get a grip. You're 13, 14 years old. You should not be crying in the dugout because of a bad error you made." I said, "This is a game. This is a game in life. And if you get knocked down, how you get up is very, very important. In fact, it's probably the most important thing. I would rather, and I tell my kids this, I would rather you fail and learn than never fail. Because if you never fail, you never learn. But if you never fail, I promise you, you never tried anything. You never put yourself out there. You never attempted to make something great. And all I'm trying to do is raise great humans. People who love their country, people who love their Lord, people who love their family, and people who want to benefit society. And that doesn't mean they need to be a congressman and go out there and change laws and make laws and things like that, or go into the military and grab a gun and defend this country. I'm pointing my son in that direction, but that's his call if he does go into the military. What I mean by being a great contributor to society and a great human is just not causing problems, not going out there and breaking laws and telling the world "F you," and telling their neighbors "F you," and doing all these things that are going to hurt the people around them. I want them to lift up the people around them. I want them to teach them something that they might not know. I want them to protect thy neighbor and to love their family, to love their mom and dad. That's all I'm trying to raise. Pay your taxes. And at the end of the day, when they lay their kids down at night, to pray over them, tell them that they love them, and say, "I'll see you in the morning." That is the, in my mind, that is the ultimate honor and the ultimate goal. And that is something I try to do, and I fail at all the time. But I can't call my kids out, my kids' mistakes without calling out my mistakes. So a couple of years ago, I decided that I needed to make some changes in my life. I needed to create more income streams. So I started an e-commerce website. And I'm the kind of guy that's like, okay, I'm just going to start it. I'm going to start watching YouTube videos, try to pay attention to people, maybe buy some courses and start doing it. And it was an immediate disaster. Tons of money thrown into it. Tons of money failed. But that doesn't mean I haven't quit yet either. I closed down that website, started another one. Different classes, different mentorships, very, very expensive, cost me thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. I probably spent $15,000 on this, trying to get it going, and it was a failure. I'm on my third iteration of it, and I'm on another course trying to put it together. And what's funny is this course that I'm on right now, it's like $100 for this course that I'm taking. And I'll go into all that stuff in the near future and tell you what I'm doing in case you guys have any interest. But I'm taking in for $100 and I'm getting more value, more information, more written work to do that's taking me through the training. And it's a 30-day training and it's kind of intense. You got to do it every day. You do have some time off on the weekends, but really that's catch-up time. And it's kind of intense, but it's freaking fantastic. And I'll go into that again in the future as to let you guys know which classes I am taking, which system I'm taking. I might put something up on a website or something like that. You guys can click the link and join it if you choose to. At the same time of taking this, I'm also trying to improve myself. In fact, today I was exercising at the gym, and don't think that I'm some exercise guru or anything like that. I am not. I'm just trying to keep the weight off of me. I've got a ridiculously bad lower back, and I'm in chronic back pain all the time. And I finally was able to get in to see my chiropractor and get cracked yesterday. And what's funny enough is he looked at me and he was examining me and he's like, you know, your legs are an inch and a quarter off. In other words, one leg was an inch and a quarter shorter than the other leg. And he's like, yeah, that's not normal. And I just kind of laughed and said, no, it's not. And I spent all last weekend on prescription painkillers, which I hate taking medicine, but I had no choice, and muscle relaxers. And it was Mother's Day weekend. And I spent Mother's Day weekend loopy on painkillers and not being able to fulfill the stuff that I wanted to do for my wife. And it's a drag. It's a drag, 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 but it's okay. My wife loves me. She understands. And that I cooked her whatever she wanted Sunday night for dinner. I cooked her whatever she wanted, and she was happy with that, but I wasn't able to take her antique shopping and do that kind of stuff. My kids were wonderful. My kids made breakfast in bed for her, and because of my back, they made breakfast in bed for Daddy, too. So we had pancakes and bacon for a Sunday morning breakfast on Mother's Day, so I got to take advantage of that, too. So it was pretty fantastic. But the whole point of all this, this podcast, is to give you guys a glimpse on a 44-year-old guy who's trying to make himself better. And I'm trying to make myself better mentally. I'm trying to make myself better physically for my children, mentally for my children. And I'm also trying to bring in another income stream or multiple income streams into my life. And the reason I'm trying to do that is so that I can put my kids through college, if at all possible. And I'm also trying to pay for retirement and go on vacation. And I'm going to work as hard as I need to work, as hard as I can, 5, 6, 7 days a week to achieve that goal. This morning I was at the gym and I was going through my the audiobook, Think and Grow Rich. You can get it. It's free on YouTube. You can just go to YouTube and put in Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, I believe is his name. And just turn it on. Get some headsets. and get on the treadmill and just start running and listening to the book. It's fantastic. It's the second time I've listened to the book. I've not read the book. I'm not a great reader. I don't know why. I used to be a fantastic reader. I used to read books all the time. You can ask my wife. She would have to tell me to go to bed. It would be 12, 1, 1 in the morning. And she's like, turn off the light, go to bed. And I would go to bed. But now, I don't know if it's just because I'm older. I don't know if it's because I'm busier with the kids. This is before we had a lot of kids too, early in our marriage, before we had kids. Or I'm just more tired. I don't know. But I prefer an audiobook now over written word. I still read books, but not very often. I still want to read more books. But finding the time to read a book is not as conducive as listening to an audiobook at the gym or in the car or even in between minutes at work, you know, things of that nature. Some changes that I've made to my life because I wanted to better myself, because I wanted to better my mind, better my body, and better my income. Some changes that I made personally is I started waking up earlier. So I wake up every morning, roughly 5 a.m., sometimes 5:30 in the morning, and I wake up and I go downstairs, make some coffee, and I get on my, in the kitchen, I set up what I want to read, and I want to read, and I want to think about my day. So I try and read something that gives me motivation, or I listen to something that gives me motivation. That's my start to the day. It could be 5-minute morning motivation. It could be 10 minutes. It could be something on YouTube, something I'm reading, something to just jumpstart the batteries, get things going besides the caffeine. Gotta have my caffeine, gotta have my coffee. Once I'm done with that, I drink a full glass of water, or I try and drink a full glass of water. Sometimes I have my water before I have my coffee, but I drink water and then I get on my computer and start seeing what's going on. I have a couple of businesses, online businesses. Like I said, I have a website, but I also have an eBay store, and I try and fulfill any orders that I might've gotten that night before and try and fulfill the orders online. I've got a VA virtual assistant who does a lot of my eBay business for me, but I still take care of a lot of the order fulfillment, or I take care of the order fulfillment, the distribution and things of that nature. I'm doing that at home. And maybe one day in the future, I'll go into how I built it, how I've started it. I've got an eBay store with close to 2,000 items on it, 2,000 products on it, and I get sales pretty consistently. I've been doing it for about a year now, a little over a year, and I was getting really nothing in my eBay store. And this might be an interesting story to you guys. I was getting nothing going on in my eBay store from the beginning when I started it to till last October. And then last October, I was listening to, I don't know, a podcast or a YouTube video. I don't remember what I was listening to. And somebody said, you need to get a virtual assistant. And I was like, a light went off. What's a virtual assistant? Virtual assistant is basically somebody who is somewhere else in the world. They could be in America, they could be in another country, it doesn't matter. And they log in to your business, whatever it is, your eBay business in my example, and they will do what you tell them to do. Usually for a cheaper fee than if you hire somebody in your office to do that for you. And the beauty of that is that if you can afford it, and it's really not that expensive, depending on where you hire them, they are working on your store when you're not working so that you can dedicate your time to doing other things. It's that mentality of don't be alone, don't be solo. You can't be a solo act and grow. It's really hard. You hit this glass ceiling because there's only so much time in the day. There's only so many decisions you can make in a day. There's only so much work you can put in the day. And oh, by the way, I'm married and I have to pay attention to my wife. And oh, by the way, I'm a parent and I have to pay attention to my 3 kids. And oh, by the way, I have a job, a 9-to-5 job, and I really need to pay attention to that before my bosses get grumpy with me. So those are the things you deal with. So if you're wanting to build something, I highly recommend that you start it yourself, see what it's all about, see all the different moving parts, and then start thinking on how you could farm out some of those parts so that you can continue to work on the strategic vision of that business. And that's what I've been learning in books and podcasts and vision and envisioning for myself what I'm going to do. And yes, I'm spending money on it, but it's really not that much money. And eventually the eBay store's profits pay for that employee. And then eventually you start making more profits on the eBay store. And then you can hire another employee. So what my virtual assistant does for me on my eBay store is that she is halfway around the world. So she works at a different time zone than me, which is great in the sense that when I'm sleeping, she's working. And when she's sleeping, I'm working. So somebody's always working on the store, which is nice. And she lists items on my store. She's putting items on my store and things that I want to sell. And she's taking the pictures and putting them on the store and the prices and all that kind of stuff and optimizing the store and the descriptions and all that good stuff. Which works out really well so that I don't do it. And that costs hours and hours and hours a day to do that. So that's what she's doing on my eBay store. And I'm getting sales. I'm getting 5 to 10 sales a day and it's growing. I'm looking forward to the day when I'm getting 50 sales a day and I can't handle anymore. And then when I get to that point, probably when I get around 20 sales a day, I'm going to hire another virtual assistant who's in turn going to take care of the order fulfillment for me and some of the customer service issues, you know, responding to the emails, because I get multiple emails a day from customers or, you know, asking anything or saying anything. And I try to treat them like I would treat my parents. I try to treat them like I would treat my neighbors. I try to be friendly and professional and try and help them out. One thing I'm a firm believer in is that the customer is not always right. The customer is not always right. They don't always get what they want. I'll give you a quick story. I had a customer 2 weeks ago and they ordered something from me and I had actually shipped it out to them. And for some reason, they couldn't see the tracking information on there. And they sent me this email and it's very, very rude, saying, I demand that you overnight this item to me and I demand that you ship this to me right away. And I responded back to him going, well, I've already shipped it out. Here's the tracking number. And they responded back going, you took too long to send this item out to me. And I they were just rude and grumpy and demanding things of me when I had already fulfilled what I was set to do. And what's funny is I was talking to a professional saying, we've already taken care of these things. You know, is there anything else we can do for you? And they just kept coming. And they sent me 3 emails. And by the 3rd email, I'd said, okay, I'm done. And I called FedEx and it took me like 20-30 minutes on the phone with FedEx. And what's funny is this, you know, I'm here in California and this item was going to Texas. Somebody in some city in Texas, not going to name any cities, it was going to them. And it actually had landed in that city. And I stopped it. I called FedEx and said, cancel the delivery. I want it back. And it took me like 20-30 minutes to get it all squared away. And I called eBay customer service and I told them exactly what's going on. I told them exactly what I'm going to do. And eBay's like, we got you. This guy's a jerk. They looked at the messages themselves and said, this guy's being a jerk. And then I responded back to the guy saying, and I said this very professionally, that we have canceled your order and canceled your delivery. And they went in and we will refund your money as soon as I get my product back. Thank you for shopping with us. Have a nice day. And they responded back like 10, 15 minutes later and they were like, really? Why? They were so innocent about it. And they even tracked and said, it's already here in my city. Why are you canceling the order? And I didn't respond because if I respond, I felt like I would escalate it. And I don't want to get in a tit for tat with a customer because I didn't want to escalate it, and I didn't want to create any sort of liability, and I didn't want to respond in the sense where they have a hook. They have something they can grab onto so that they have something they can complain to me about or complain to eBay about me. And I didn't respond. There's a time, and this is something that I've been trying to teach my kids. There's a time to respond, and there's a time when you shouldn't respond at all and let your actions do the talking. And I let my actions do the talking in that sense. I was very polite to them. I was very professional with them. I was very short with them, saying, thank you for shopping with us. We're canceling your order. You will get a refund, we promise, as soon as we get our product back. They sent me two more emails after that, and I didn't respond to either one of them because there was nothing left to say. And like I said, there's a time to respond, and there's a time not to respond. And I chose at that time was not a good time to respond. So anyways, I've been talking for 45 minutes. I don't know if I've said anything of importance. I don't know if I've said anything that will help you. I hope I have. There will be more broadcasts very, very soon. And I hope to take you guys on this journey for me, a journey of growth, where I will physically be able to create another income source for my family so that I can continue to lift them up. Maybe take my wife on a vacation for once, and maybe one day be able to get a home. Other than that, this is JC. Thank you for listening. I hope you all have a great day. Thanks.